桑耶遮当奏基多那玛张智巴迪达米亚苏基达基真苏基比苏南基拉本杰桑耶遮巴迪
I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. I go for refuge until I am enlightened, to the Buddhas, the Dharma, and the assembly of saints, from the virtuous merits that I collect, by the practice of giving and the other perfections, may I attain the state of a Buddha to benefit all sentient beings. May all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. May all beings never be separated from the blessedness of sorrowless. May all dwell in equanimity, free from aversion and clinging. The ground is covered with flowers and sprinkled with scented water. In the middle is Mount Meru, surrounded by the four continents and ornamented by the sun and the moon. By visualizing all this and offering it as a Buddha realm, may all sentient beings partake of the Buddha's pure lands.
Om Guru Buddha Bodhisattva Sapparivara Ratnamo Buddha Mega Samu Sapparana Samaye. Okay, welcome. Parting from the four attachments. So, last week we actually finished the fourth line and completed, shall we say, the first course of the teaching. And so tonight we're going to do something a little bit different. And this is something that Lama requested at the very beginning when we planned the outline for this course. And that is, we're going to take the commentary by just one master, Gorampa Sonam Senge, and hear what he has to say, because his point of view is slightly different than what we've been hearing so far. And I think you could say it's a little bit more advanced in a sense. The commentary that Gorampa Sonam Senge wrote is the commentary that's used as the text in Sakya College. The philosophical college is very advanced studies. And so this particular commentary would be considered, in a sense, more advanced or intermediate anyway. And Lama said specifically, wait till the end to teach it. Because now that you've had, you know, the introduction and all these weeks that we've studied this, you have a lot of foundation, so to speak, for what he's going to say, and you'll be able to understand it better. And if we didn't do all that work previously, some of this would be probably missed. Gorampa Sonam Senge is an interesting person historically, interesting historical character, speaking of history. He was born in 1429 in Kham, Tibet, and he passed away in 1489. And he is considered one of the greatest, certainly in the top two, Sakya philosophers. Sakya Pandita being the other one, of course. Gorampa Sonam Senge had a couple of very famous gurus, one of whom was Nörchen Khunga Zangpo, who we've heard from many, many times in the previous weeks here. Who was the founder of Nor subsect and Nor monastery. And later on, Gorampa Sonam Senge became the abbot of Nor monastery. And another one of Gorampa's famous teachers or gurus was named Rongtong. He only goes by one name, so that's how he's normally known as. But he had these two great gurus that were great scholars and practitioners. So he really had tremendous training. And then he himself, of course, was brilliant. And wrote lots of commentaries and, you know, various texts. And you may ask yourself, well, why haven't we heard of him if he was so good? He's not that famous outside of Sakya circles. And one of the reasons is that he, in his writings, he challenged the philosophical writings of Lama Tsongkhapa, the founder of the Gelugpa. Gelugpa, of course, even today is the biggest and most powerful of the four schools. And at that time, when Garampa lived, the Gelugpas, they ran the government too. They were in charge of Lhasa, the capital. And so when Garampa contested Tsongkhapa's writings, the government promptly banned him after quite a few centuries. And so Sakyas, of course, knew who he was, but the larger world, the wider world, hasn't heard of him so much. But it's partially, anyway, because of this suppression that happened. It was only relatively recently that the ban was lifted. So you're going to be hearing somebody who is a great master, but not that well known. he's just normally known as Garampa, but his full name was Garampa Sonam Senge. And he wrote his instruction, or his commentary on parting from the four attachments. And I'm just going to go through his commentary and highlight some of it, and we're going to do some of his meditations, which he wrote and put in the commentary, which is another thing that makes it special. And Lama suggested doing that. So we'll be doing a number of very short meditations tonight, getting a taste of it. And also, a lot of masters say you should do short meditations and do them frequently. So that's what we're going to be modeling tonight, is short, frequent meditations. We won't have time to do all of them. We'll see how the time goes and how many we get in. He doesn't just jump right into commenting on the four lines. He starts with an homage prayer, which is traditional, although not all texts have that. He has a very nice one. And then he gives a kind of an introduction on mind training itself. Four attachments, of course, falls under the category of mind training. And what he says is that there's two ways to understand mind training. The first is scriptural references or scriptural authority. And he gives a number of examples that he pulls out of scriptures to make his case about not exactly the four attachments specifically, but Dharma in general. And so it's kind of a really nice warm-up, in a way, before he gets into the specifics of the four attachments. So I'll just read a couple of the scriptural quotes that he put in his commentary, because I think they're interesting, and they're concise. So one of them that he quotes is from our friend Shantideva. Shantideva wrote this: based on the perfectly endowed human form, with the prerequisites of the eight leisures and the ten endowments, one practices the six perfections that are the nature of bodhisattva conduct. And when these are linked with the perfectly pure prayer, the stages of the path leading to Buddhahood are attained. So he's saying, in so many words, practice the six perfections. Another quote that Garampa uses is from Acharya Aryadeva, who's an Indian philosopher, master, who we think was probably born around the year 200, Common Era, and he lived about 50 years, so around 200 to 250, so way back. Very famous, very respected philosopher Aryadeva wrote this: having as one's aim the supreme enlightenment that abandons the four erroneous views of perceiving oneself to be pure, happy, permanent, and possessed of a self, one destroys the afflictions along with their cause, which are a hindrance to the accomplishment of the bodhisattva's career. making oneself a suitable vessel for understanding the ultimate truth, the main practice is then being shown the nectar of the ultimate truth. These are the stages of the path. So just to back up and go through that again, first of all, Ayurveda says we want to abandon erroneous views, and that's pretty much what the four attachments are about, or abandoning, you know, abandoning our attachments. And he says the four erroneous views of perceiving oneself to be pure, this is very common. People think, you know, my body's pure, I washed it, I dressed it, I put on perfume, and I had my hair done, I look great. But, of course, if we look at our bodies, they're not pure. They produce all kinds of impure things. But we have this, we sort of live under that illusion in terms of how we live our lives. We're under the erroneous view that we're happy. If you remember back when we talked about the eight worldly poisons or the four poisonous dichotomies, one of them is happy. Remember that? Yeah, we're under the illusion that what we call happiness really is happiness, instead of what is really happiness, which is the bliss of enlightenment. So we operate under the delusion of being happy. It's not to say you should be grumpy, but you shouldn't be under the delusion that it's the ultimate, you know. The erroneous view of being permanent. Now, of course, if you ask people, are you permanent, they'll say, well, of course not, everybody dies. But if you look at how we lead our lives, we make plans for, you know, years in advance. We get 30-year mortgages, and we live as if, you know, our calendar is full of stuff for next week and next month. And we don't really always live as if we are impermanent. We fool ourselves a lot, you know. And then the final one is the actually being possessed of a self. And that's what we just covered in the fourth line about selflessness of self, selflessness of others, and that whole illusion, which we just covered. So those are kind of the four things that he points out that we need to be aware that we're mistaking. And then he says, when you do that, you make yourself suitable, then you can start understanding the ultimate truth, which again is the fourth line here in what we covered recently. You know, what is ultimate enlightenment thought? And that's it. That's the path. So that's what Ayurveda says. And then the last scriptural reference that I'll read is from Atisha, another famous Indian who was responsible for a large amount of the Dharma in going to Tibet, and he's actually one of the great mind training masters too. And he said, the person of small scope abandons attachment to this life and attains benefit for just the next life. The person of medium scope abandons the fruits of samsaric happiness and attains just personal liberation. And the person of great scope attains Buddhahood for the benefit of all living beings. And these three kinds of persons are stages of the path. And actually, that quote is just another way of saying the four lines. If you think back about what we went through here, this is what we did. So those are some scriptural quotes in Gaurampa's commentary. I won't go through all of them, but just to summarize, he says, though the excellent good traditions by which the mighty ones unerringly explained the Mahayana teachings are splendid, these scriptural traditions are for the clever-minded to understand and not for those of lesser intelligence. This class is so clever, I thought I had to read that. Yeah. No, but it assumes that you have some understanding and some ability to kind of get what they're saying, but it's also a tradition that scriptural quotes are given to give a certain authenticity to what the commentator is saying. So that's also a tradition. And then he goes into what he calls the oral tradition. And he says, Gaurampa says, Second is to practice the essential meaning of the oral instructions. And in general, there are many cases of this type of teachings. But there are two paramount ones. So what he's referring to there is the mind training teachings, of which there are many, many. And what he says is there are two that stand out, and they're also famous. One of them is the mind training that Atisha got from one of his masters, Surlingpa. Tradition says that Surlingpa was in Indonesia, even though he was an Indian master, and Atisha went through a lot of hardships to get down to Indonesia and find him and study with him and get the teachings, take it back to India, and then later take to Tibet. So Atisha is pretty famous in the mind training world for his contribution, so to speak. However, Gorampa says that while that's a great teaching, that the parting from the four attachments is even superior. And, well, he uses the word especially higher. Then he lists what the four lines are, which we've written out here so that everybody can see them and remember them. Now, the thing about Gorampa that I find interesting is he takes these four lines and he takes them a step further. If you look at the lines, every one of them has not in it. You know, if you do this, you don't have that. You know, if grasping arises, you don't have the view. They're all not. And what Gorampa does is it's not that he refutes that or says anything against that, but he takes it another step further and sort of like, okay, well, now what? If I don't do that, what do I do? Well, he's going to tell us. So he has a sort of line-by-line extension of these four lines, which I'll now read to you, and then we'll go into it depending on how much time we have. So he says, Gorampa says, concerning the meaning of the four lines. Let's just read. If you're attached to this life, you're not a true Dharma practitioner. And what Gorampa says instead is, having parted from the attachment to this life, your mind proceeds towards the Dharma. Now, we've talked a little bit about proclivity in the past, but this is a reference to proclivity. Sakyapandita talks quite a bit about Buddha nature, and everybody has Buddha nature, but some people have Buddha nature and proclivity towards Dharma. Some people are naturally compassionate or naturally kind or naturally good, naturally moral, and not everybody is naturally like those. And so Sakyapandita points that out. And so this proceeding towards the Dharma only happens if you have proclivity. I mean, look how many people aren't studying Dharma and practicing Dharma. There's only certain people that have that proclivity. So what Gorampa is saying, I think, is that once you leave your attachment to this life, well, then what do? Well, then you start looking for something else, and then you turn, if you have the proclivity, you turn towards Dharma. So that's his extension of the first line. Second line, if you're attached to cyclic existence, you don't have renunciation. And what Gorampa says is, having parted from attachment to the world of existence, you traverse the path of Dharma. So on the first line, we turn towards it, and then when you decide to renounce samsara, well, there's nothing left to do but to practice. You obviously want to do something in the void, and practicing Dharma is what Gorampa says occurs naturally after you have the second renunciation. Third line, if you are attached to your own self-interest, you do not have the enlightenment thought. And Gorampa says, having parted from attachment to your own purpose, the path is cleared of errors. So this is kind of a guideline to have. to check up on yourself. Am I doing self-interest or am I doing altruism? Yeah. And you can see, am I making a mistake or not? And if I am, I can clear that error. And so it's kind of like guardrails that keep you on the path. Because as we've said many, many times, it's easy to drive it into the ditch and get stuck there. You know, the formless realm and those discussions that we had about that. Never mind just being immoral and having bad karma accumulate. So you traverse the path of Dharma when you get to the third line. And then the fourth one, if grasping arises, you do not have the view. And he says, Garampa says, having parted from attachment to the four extremes, illusory perceptions appear as primordial wisdom. And so what are the four extremes? Existence, non-existence, both, neither. So we went through that when we went through the fourth line. The perception, our ordinary perception, is deluded. We generally, most of us lean towards the extreme of existence. We think things exist. We think our ego exists. That's the one that a lot of us are caught in. Non-existence seems to me is fairly easy to refute. You can't say there's nothing, nothing, nothing. There's all this stuff around us and then our own stuff. So that one is refutable. And then both, how could it be both? How could something be existent and non-existent? It's a logical contradiction. It's not possible. So that one, get rid of that one. And neither. Well, there's obviously something there, so you can't say it's neither. So the question goes back to the first one, which is existence. And that's the one that I think that we really mostly work on when we're working with the fourth line and wisdom and emptiness, shunyata, all these things that we talked about the last couple of weeks. That's the delusion that most of us need to work and dissolve, so to speak, or go beyond. So those are the four extremes. And then having parted from attachment to the four extremes, the illusory perceptions appear as the primordial wisdom. So when you go beyond the delusions, the perceptions, they're already wisdom, but you perceive it that way, which is what we don't do normally, most of us. Okay. So that's his twist on the four lines, and he doesn't negate them, but he takes us further. More along the lines of, well, now what do you do? Well, you do this. Okay. And then, in his commentary, he goes through a sort of summary, or in more detail, I guess you would say, of these four points. And I won't go through all of them, because we've covered these before, but for example, the precious human rebirth, he goes through that. We spent extensive time on that. And then he goes into death and impermanence. So you remember at the very beginning we did precious human rebirth and we did death and impermanence. So he follows that. And he has, as I said before, he has put meditations in his commentary. So what I'd like to do now, we're going to just do very short meditation. I'll read his words and it'll be a guided meditation by Garampa. Okay, so find a posture that's comfortable for you to sit for a moment, hopefully with your spine elongated. Take a minute to let your mind settle. And Garampa wrote, "There is no one living who, having been born, is able to live forever and not die. Death is certain. Furthermore, there is no assurance here about when I will die or not die, since there are many causes for death and few causes for life. So death is certain. And when the time of death arrives, nothing whatsoever, such as medicine, our religious services can avert it. Nothing whatsoever is of benefit when dying. Having contemplated in this manner, it's clear that after death, neither attendance nor wealth, nothing other than Dharma, will follow after me. Therefore, I must part from attachment to this life. And since this is the chief method for causing the mind to proceed towards Dharma, even now, when eating good food, or wearing good clothes, or surrounded by many friends, I must meditate on the thought, now it's like this, but someday I shall be separated from this life, and I will have to go alone. All of these things are without essence. They are worthless. Okay. So then Gaurampa continues following the outline of the four attachments to discuss karma. And he has a longer meditation on karma that we won't do. But he does say this about it. Especially by understanding the meaning of the law of cause and result, from the viewpoint of what is to be accepted and rejected, it's very important to put this into practice. Then he moves on to the second line. His take on it is, having parted from attachment to the world of existence, you traverse the path of Dharma. He has a long meditation here, going into the defects of samsara. Remember, we went through what happens in the hell realms, the hot hells, the cold hells, the neighboring hells, and then into the hungry ghost realms and all the suffering that they go through, and their lifespan is 15,000 years of suffering. And then the animal realms, of which there are actually three. One of, we only see one of the three. So there's a lot more animals out there that we don't even have contact with. And then even the higher realms, the gods have it pretty good until they die, and then they fall, and they actually suffer more than the hell realm beings. So that's no good. And the demigods, they're just always angry at the gods because the gods have it good and they don't. So they suffer. And then the human realm, we all know about suffering in the human realm. He goes through all of those, and then he summarizes it by saying, well, therefore, the realms of existence do not pass beyond the nature of suffering, so I must totally abandon all the world of existence and must attain the stage of liberation. So that concludes what are called the four foundations of Dharma, which is a common teaching held by all Buddhists. Gaurampa goes on to the third line, and he says, having parted from attachment to your own purpose, the errors of the path are dispelled. And there are three meditations in that section. And he says, the first is to meditate on loving kindness, It's not proper to gain liberation for yourself alone. And he has a very short meditation on that one, so let's do that one. All living beings of the three realms have acted as my very kind parents on many occasions. With particular respect to my mother of this life, first she bore me in her womb. After birth, I was like an emaciated worm, but she kept me alive. Then she kindly protected me with food, clothes, and so on. Recalling the measure of my mother's kindness, and seeing that this mother of mine has been so kind, I must put her in a state of happiness. So that's the first meditation in this section, loving kindness. And then he goes on to the second meditation, which is compassion. And as if to prove the point that meditations don't need to be long, this one is very short. To preface it, he says, to meditate on compassion, recall whatever kindness your present mother has shown, and the need for this kind mother to be parted from suffering also, since she is now endowed with the nature of suffering. Have compassion for her. That's the introduction. And now we'll do the meditation. Wouldn't it be proper if she were parted from suffering? I must place her in a state that is separated from suffering. So one of the things I like about this commentary is he gives little short meditations, which you can either just do a short meditation and that's it, or you can sort of stack these. You can go through these if you have time and work your way through them. But it's really important to do the meditation, and keeping it short helps us so that our mind doesn't take off somewhere. And then Gaurapa comments saying, if you do not produce these two, loving kindness and compassion, in your mind, then enlightenment thought will not really arise. So it's very important to exert yourself in practicing them. Now, the next meditation, remember we talked about wishing enlightenment thought and entering enlightenment thought? Well, this is wishing enlightenment thought meditation. And that was broken down, actually. So he says the third meditation is the enlightenment thought, which includes wishing enlightenment thought, the enlightenment thought that equates self and others, and the enlightenment thought that exchanges self and others. So we're going to do the meditation on the first of those, which is wishing. Okay. So this is his meditation on that. Although I wish that my kind parents equal in number to all living beings of the three realms of existence, be endowed with happiness, and be apart from suffering, right now I do not have the ability to bring this about. And not only that, the great ones of the universe, the gods, the hearers, the solitary realizers who have gone beyond, do not have this ability. Since it is only the fully and perfectly enlightened Buddhas who have this ability, for the sake of all sentient beings, I must attain the state of full enlightenment, and I must liberate all my kind parents from the ocean of existence. He comments afterwards saying, there is no other cause for the attainment of Buddhahood. If this enlightenment thought is produced in your mind, then the root of virtue of whatever practice you perform becomes a cause for attaining full enlightenment. And therefore, this enlightenment thought has been praised many times in the Mahayana Great Vehicle Sutras. So next is the meditation. There's a short meditation on equating self and others. So this is the meditation. Just as I want happiness, so do all sentient beings also want happiness. Therefore, just as I would accomplish my own happiness, so I must also accomplish the happiness of all sentient beings. And just as I do not want suffering, so do all sentient beings also not want suffering. Therefore, just as I would remove my own suffering, so I must also remove the suffering of all sentient beings. And then finally, the third meditation in this section is the meditation of exchanging self for others. And this is his short meditation on that. Visualizing your present mother in front of you, think like this. Although this mother has been so kind, she is dwelling in the nature of suffering. So I feel compassion toward her. May all of my mother's sufferings and her non-virtues ripen upon me so that I experience them. May all of my happiness and virtue ripen upon my mother so that she attains Buddhahood. And then he comments at the end about this meditation. This is the heart of Mahayana practice, and it is the secret teaching of all Buddhas of the three times. Three times being past, present, and future. So that's the heart of it right there. So these are some examples of some meditations that you can do on your own. Of course, you don't have to stick to this, but the idea being go through the steps, go through the stages, and short and focused and deep. He also makes a note here to remind us that you should start your practices, any practice, with going for refuge, enlightenment thought, and he also mentions guru devotion, and that all practices should be finished with dedication. So those are the steps that we do for all practices in this tradition. And then take your meditation out into your life. The practice doesn't stop when you get off the cushion. He says, at all other times, be mindful in whatever activities you are engaged in, such as walking, sleeping, and sitting. And then finally he goes into his commentary on the fourth line, which is fairly extensive because the discussion of the fourth line is fairly extensive. What he says, and this is something we've said before, is that the realization of the fourth line cannot be accomplished without meditation. It's not something that you can achieve just by reading a book or just kind of casually thinking about it. It needs to go in deep. And that's a fundamental principle that all teachers say, as far as I know. And then he gives a sort of a warning, and he says, for temporary benefit, it is important that though you may accomplish some virtues, still do not become conceited. And do not think, oh, I am the doer of virtue. These are the different types of virtue, and I myself have done this virtue. And really what he's saying, which is another way of saying that all practices need to be sealed with shunyata, or emptiness. So there is no doer. If we're practicing generosity, there is no giver, there is no receiver, and there is no gift. In the ultimate sense, there is no. Remember we talked about Nagarjuna's two truths, relative truth, absolute truth. We're talking absolute truth in the fourth line. In the absolute level, there is no giver, receiver, or gift. And we need to seal all of our practices with that awareness to make it be a perfection. We talk about the six perfections. The practices that are not sealed with emptiness are not perfections. Generosity is just generosity. Anybody can just give something to somebody, and that's generosity. But if we really want to say, yes, I'm practicing the perfection of generosity, first of all, it has to be done out of compassion. In other words, the receiver's needs are what really count, not the fact that I have orange socks that I don't feel like wearing anymore and I'll give them to a charity. But does somebody need something, then I'm going to think about it from their point of view, compassion, and give according to that, and seal it with emptiness. So all of those things need to be there before you can really say, oh, I did the practice, the perfection of generosity. So it's important that we understand these things. Remember in the very beginning we talked about inauthentic morality? You think you're practicing, but you're not really. So one of the great teachings in this whole four lines is to sort of clean up our practice, so to speak, to refine it and make it actually perfection, and not just kind of a practice. So he emphasizes that. And then he says, in order to make meaningful use of your present physical activities, you should perform prostrations and circumambulations, and I would say, and so on, practices that are physical. And then Garampa continues, in order to make meaningful use of verbal activities, you should recite praises to the Buddhas and Bodhisattvas and read profound sutras. And I would add, or you can do mantra recitations or sutta recitations. There's lots of verbal practices. And in order to make meaningful use of mental activities, you should meditate on loving kindness, compassion, and the enlightenment thought. In order to make meaningful use of your wealth, you should make offerings to the three precious jewels and offer respect, homage, and so on to the Sangha, the spiritual community. And if you make resolutions to gain Buddhahood with pure prayers, then you will certainly obtain perfect enlightenment that is endowed with all stainless qualities. And then he repeats again, he sort of makes another review about precious human rebirth, impermanence, karma. And he makes a summary here, so just going to read his summary. The first stage is having well understood that the vessel of a human body that is needed to accomplish holy dharma is difficult to obtain, and that its nature is impermanent and perishes quickly, diligently apply yourself to undertaking virtue and rejecting non-virtue. The second stage, having seen limitless living beings in the ocean of existence enter into the mouth of the sea monster of suffering, produce renunciation that strives for the dry land of nirvana's liberation. The third stage is, having remembered that living beings equal to space have been your father and mother again and again and have bestowed beneficial kindness upon you, accomplish the purpose of others through loving kindness, compassion, and the excellent enlightenment thought. And the fourth stage is, having realized that whatever things appear are your own mind, and that the mind itself is like a magical illusion, just being a collection of causes and conditions, and that the magical illusion is devoid of mental creativity, meditate on the ultimate truth. And then finally, for your conduct, make offerings to the three precious jewels at every opportunity. Gradually abandon non-virtue. Satisfy the protectorless and poor through giving. And then, if a dedication prayer completely free of the three aspects of actor, action, and object of action is applied to these acts, it is certain that you will attain your temporary and ultimate purposes. And then he gives a kind of a closing statement about who the patron was and who he wrote this for. So that's Gurampa's take on the four attachment lines.
Lovely, thank you.
Hmm?
Thank you.
Interesting, huh?
Beautiful.
Yeah. So there's other meditations in here that we don't have time for, and you can make up your own, obviously. However, in the course of these, I think 17 weeks, we've had a few of these guided meditations in the evening, usually at the end, and there's a lot of them. And so our webmaster, Cheryl, did a lot of work and went through all 17, actually 16 because tonight's the 17th, but she went through the 16 audios and pulled out all the meditations and wrote down the minute and second of the audio, where if you want to go and hear them or use them or at least review them, it's easy to go and just go, okay, the 42nd minute and the 54th second, we did the false morality meditation. And those are available to anybody. She printed up copies, and I wrote the website address on the bottom if anybody wants to use these. So would somebody like to hand these out? Yeah, thank you. So thank you, Cheryl. A lot of work.
Thank you.
but really handy tool to have. I'm going to use it. Yeah. Now, next week will be the last class in this cycle of teachings. If you talk to somebody who has attended, but they're not here tonight, please invite them to come next week. It'd be nice to see them and for our last gathering. And there will be something special, which I won't say now, for the last teaching. And also there will be information about next cycle. So are there any questions about any of this tonight?
Just to thank you tonight, expended. Thank you, and all of the other effort expended. Thank you.
Yeah. If there aren't any other questions, we'll do our dedication. We should thank Stephen too for his calligraphy.
Yes.
Okay, dedication prayer. So nam de tam cha zi pa ni tom na ne pe da nam pam je te ke ga na chi ba lung tu pe ye si pe tso le do wa do wa sho Jang Chu Sam Cho Grim Po Che Na Ke Pa Nam Ke Gyu Che Ke Man Yam Par Me Par Yam Gong Ni Gong Chu Pel Par Sho Jang Bo Bo Ji Ta Ke Kim tu sang po de yang de jin te De da kung gi je su da lo je Ye wa di da tam che wa tu ngo Tu sung shek pi kya wa tam che ki No wa Chotunga Pali Dakshenge Vetsawa Dikun Kyan Sangpo Chote Rabtunga Vargi Chaksawa Dang Choting Shakpadam Chesu Yiran Kushin So agi ge wa chung ze da gi chi sa pa tam je zong pe jang chu chi.
By this merit, may all attain omniscience. May it defeat the enemy of wrongdoing. From the stormy waves of birth, old age, sickness, and death. From the ocean of samsara, may all beings be free. Bodhicitta is precious. May it arise in all beings in whom it has arisen. May it never decline where it has arisen, but may it ever grow and flourish. In whatever way, Bhavya Manjushri and Samantabhadra know how to transfer merit, so do I dedicate all my own virtues that I may train to be like them. Through this dedication, praise the Supreme, by the victorious Buddhas of the past, present, and future, I, together with all sentient beings, dedicate these roots of virtue to attaining Buddhahood. May whatever virtue I may have gained from prostrating, offering, confessing, rejoicing, requesting, and beseeching, be dedicated to attaining perfect enlightenment.
Thank you.
Thank you, Michael.